Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Shaky Hands, I Rebuke You. It is the Anfield Rap. Neil Atkinson, produced by Andy Heaton, with Fuad Hassan, with Rob Gutman, and with Adam Smith. After Liverpool crashed to their first defeat in 26 games, West Ham United 3, Liverpool 2. Let's start in the most basic way, Adam. Getting beat's rubbish. I'd actually forgotten how rubbish getting beat was. I hated the process of getting beat. I would like it to not happen again for 25 games. And I really do. I want to, if I sound like a six-year-old around this, I want to enjoy sounding like a six-year-old. I really, really, really wanted to scream and scream and scream until I was sick. And there should be a vehicle to do that. It probably isn't this show, but there's a part of me that just wishes it was.
Yeah, I mean, it can be this show, Neil. We're all friends here.
No one's listening.
Yes, getting beat is rubbish. And I think it's one of those things where you feel, where you lose, but you played well, you feel like you can walk away from that and kind of go, okay, well, you know, look, there's better teams than you out there. Other teams are on the pitch. When you lose and you feel like you shouldn't have lost and things didn't go your way, it feels even more irritating, like has an extra edge to it because you feel like they should have been better than they were. And I think that it was my wife's birthday last week, but we've been away. So last night we went out for dinner with her family and she came in when it had just gone 2-1. And said, do you remember we're leaving and you've got to watch the end of this in the car? And I was like, absolutely do not remember that, no. And so that added a whole level of stress to things, right?
Oh, I can imagine.
But then at the same time, because we were going out for dinner with the family, I didn't get to be a spoilt child about it, really. So I had to kind of...
I would have been a spoiled child anyway.
Well, yeah.
You're a better man than I.
You know, I put on my brave face and I sort of was fine. And then, you know, kind of... All right, fine. It all dissipated. Didn't think about it. Went to bed. And I have my alarm set up in such a way that it goes off so I hear the sports news on Radio 2. And it literally came on and it came on and it went, oh, Christ, I know what I'm going to be told about now. I'd sort of forgotten because I'd been asleep. I'd forgotten all about it. And so my day's been ruined again, like 2 days ruined in a row by these pricks.
And that's... There's the usual thing that happens after that sort of after a result or in general in Liverpool superland, I don't know quite how to Liverpool's hinterland, Rob, where there's then lots of people either having a very emotional reaction and then people reacting to other people's emotional reaction and saying you're having a very emotional reaction there. I've got lots of sympathy with anyone who decides to go off the deep end off the back of that because I was prepared to burn buildings down at the final whistle. And if people, you know, and we should all be more mature and we should all accept that, not that it's just a game, but we should accept that sometimes if you play a game, you will lose. It literally happens. But genuinely, even now, I can feel this like physical thing within me being absolutely fucking livid with Liverpool Football Club after they've just gone 25 games unbeaten.
Yeah, I don't begin to relate to people who can be sanguine at the final whistle going, one of them, eh? Bad day. I mean, in a way, a bad defeat enables you to go off at the deep end with a bit more safety because you, whatever happens, there are going to be a lot more people around you who also want to go off.
At the final whistle, would you have sold the goalkeeper?
Yes. And then you and I had this conversation. Before the game, I was a couple of wines ago. I think Alisson, pound for pound, is the handsomest man in world football. I was proudly proclaiming. By the end, he could fuck off out of my life. And the manager with him. What was he thinking? And there's many, you know, Jürgen's been sacked a few times in the last year by me. But it gives him his edge. It keeps him on the go. Jürgen messages me from time to time saying, Rob, I don't hold it against you. But it was hard. I don't, yeah. You know, drawing with Brighton last week, I'm not going to say it hurt more, but it's frustrating that you can't lose it at a draw as much. Because a draw, you go, well, you know.
Hard lines.
And in a way, the Brighton, if we're doing perspective, we've got to move on to perspective at some point in a minute.
We'll move on to perspective. I promise to the listeners as well.
We'll start that process, and I'm the most, you know, the most irrational person in defeat of anyone I know. The result home to Brighton was worse. Those were 2 points dropped. Albeit people might feel we played better. A draw, we could have played really quite well and drawn with a good West Ham team yesterday. But the other bit of perspective I have is, pub I run, watched it in there last night, was in there this morning, cool light of day. Cleaners were just setting up. They'd left the telly on and Sky was on showing a rerun of the game. And I'm like, fuck off. Just don't want us. But actually, I quietly caught the last 10 minutes where we have a bit of pressure and a half chance and a really good chance. I'm like, you know what? On another day, we might not be cry-arsing so much. But it is what it is and it's just fucking horrible.
The strange thing about the game, I've had a couple of people external to being Liverpool supporters through other bits this morning message me going, really good game. Sorry about the result, really good game. Mm. And I actually didn't really see it that way, but maybe it's because you're in a chimp's out, maybe because you're in the moment. In a really strange way, I, Fuad, don't genuinely sort of feel... There's a lot of praise for West Ham knocking around, and I was praising West Ham before the performance, so I don't think it's me being moody or anything. I actually don't think West Ham play all that well, but I sort of feel like Liverpool deserve and get nothing because of what Liverpool do wrong. And that's where, if your side or a side deserves and gets nothing, then by default, the other side gets 3 points. It's how the whole thing works. I felt West Ham were worthy of a point. I felt Liverpool were worthy of 0 points.
Yeah, definitely. It comes back to that whole thing of that game was very much in Liverpool's control. Yes, refereeing decisions, maybe didn't go our way and everything like that. But at the end of the day, Liverpool didn't do what Liverpool have been doing and should be doing in games like that. West Ham set up pretty much, almost the same as they did last year when we went over there. Same sort of tactics in terms of how they set up defensively and counter-attacking play. But yesterday was just a bit... Liverpool just weren't sharp enough. And to say that about this Liverpool team is really odd because we saw on Wednesday how sharp they looked off the back of a disappointing result on Saturday. And it just didn't feel like at any point yesterday that it was gonna happen. There were players that you don't usually associate that with, Fabinho, Matip, that kind of looked a little bit off it. And it looked like that from the first minute all the way to the end when Liverpool did have a period of pressure. You just didn't feel Liverpool were gonna get out of that rut. And the painful thing for me is just not having that belief. We've had belief in this Liverpool team to turn around, score lines like that for the last 2-3 years plus. But yesterday in Brighton, Brighton in the ground, it just didn't feel like anyone believed the third goal was going to come, which is really strange. I can't quite work out why that is.
Do you think in general? So after the Brighton game, one of the things I took from it was this is a team that early this season lost 6 consecutive home games. Its all-round game went to pieces. Whether or not certain players were on the pitch for part of that is almost separate to a collective whole. For instance, Andy Robertson was, Virgil van Dijk wasn't. But I still feel Fuad a little bit like they're maybe just, even off the back of 25 games unbeaten, they're maybe just a little bit more vulnerable than we think. They're maybe just a little bit mentally shakier than we've thought. Even when at times during that run they've shown unbelievable mental strength. I do wonder if there is still... He's still trying to toughen them back up a little bit. And I think one of the things I didn't see yesterday, and certainly in the key moment around the second goal, was a Liverpool side prepared to be really, really tough, really, really hard, really, really cynical.
Yeah, they did. They look a little bit intimidated, didn't they, by the whole occasion, the atmosphere, the opposition players. Everything seemed to be a little bit too much for them. And it's hard to put, what to point that to. Yes, the losing streak last year is definitely a factor. But I just sort of wonder what the manager has to do now to get that back, because we saw with the first goal, 2-3 years ago, what a Liverpool defender gets in the way of Antonio and he keeps him away from the goalkeeper. They work out things on the pitch a lot better 2-3 years ago. And it just feels like this season so far, there have been enough moments now where it's starting to become a little bit of a worry.
One of my things, if you want to do the comparison from 2 years ago, Adam, from the game, was we get out the first half all right. The manager's got issues with the referee and with his decisions in the first half, and he mentions them post-match. And the everything he says is perfectly legitimate. I don't entirely agree, but it's absolutely fine, the points he makes. And if he's thinking that on the sidelines, I'm all right with that as well. But my thing here would be, but we get out the first half, okay, Jürgen, we're all right at half-time. I don't think we're very good at all, bar one good chance for Mane, where he's ultimately unlucky that it's just straight at the keeper. If it's either side, it's in the back of the net. I don't think we're good at all 45 to 67 to when they score. And that's strange in that the Liverpool side that we think of as the Liverpool side, we would often praise the half times. We praise how they come out second 45. And going in to half time, I thought 1-1, fine, take 1-1, get in half time, get a couple of things fixed. Just never quite happens. They never quite create. And then they concede a goal that is just so soft.
Yeah, I think it's one of those strange things, isn't it? That look, I am one of those people who thinks, you know, and it is perfectly okay to say there should have been a red card. That I personally think it was a foul on the goalkeeper. It should have been 0-0, and they should have been down to 10 men after 8 minutes of the game. In which case, it's an entirely different match. It is okay to say that and not be excusing what comes after it.
Of course.
And I think what the it almost feels like the manager was angry with it at half time and was saying to them, "This referee's screwed us a bit here," and they came out. Like, but they didn't come out angry. They came out like annoyed, or like do you see what I mean? Like the difference between
they came out a bit like, "Oh, it's just not going to quite be our day."
Yeah, it's not going to be our day today. And I think one of the very, very few criticisms I have for this manager is that he's not very good when it comes to taking the referee out of the equation. I don't think this Liverpool team is very good at saying, "We're getting nothing from this ref, so stop asking for stuff." Right? We have it time and again where you see a referee who's giving you nothing, giving you absolutely nothing, and players still keep going down for really soft, looking for soft free kicks and things. They do that sort of thing where they're not good at saying, "We need to this guy is not on our side. We need to remove him from the equation and do what, you know, play to the best of our strengths." And when they came out after half time, they almost played like they were feeling sorry for themselves that the referee had screwed them over twice. And that kind of played out. They didn't, as you say, respond well to going, "This is the start of a half where we are on as even." We could very, very easily have gone into the second half still 1-0 down, but yep, we didn't. So they should have gone out and said, "We're back to square one, 0-0. This match is anybody's to play for, and we are just as good as they are, if not better than them."
There's a strange phenomenon in football. I think I'm only thinking about properly for the first time in this moment, so I may be talking shite, but when you come up against a team like West Ham, who are a tier, I know they're physically above us in the league today, but as Moyes knows and said before the game, they are a tier below us. But when you come up against, and over a season, I think that will be proven the case, but when you come up against them, especially on their own ground, there are two iterations of them you could play. One is the one, if things go right for you early on and you hit your stride, that you could show that gap. But there's another where that gap narrows for that one day only, incredibly quickly. We've seen it ourselves do it to rampant Ferguson United teams, quite frankly, and even Wenger teams, Chelsea teams, when we were at that tier below those title-challenging teams, where when we're in an Anfield and suddenly we've got an early goal, the cop got behind the team, suddenly there was nothing between a team that maybe had won back-to-back titles and us, who had finished seventh or eighth or sixth for the last few years. And when we went to West Ham last year, okay, it was behind closed doors, but they were probably in the similar sort of vein of health, weren't they? I think they'd won matches on the bounce.
Yeah.
But by not letting them score early, by getting the first footing in the game, we were able to sort of demonstrate the fact of the matter. But the early goal is such a killer.
Yeah.
And even though we get back into it before half time, the marker has been set down. That crowd have had a good period of time in the game. That team have had a good period of time in the game and keeping us at bay. It was always going to be very, very difficult. The first goal is everything in that game. I mean, we saw it to an extent. Liverpool don't tend to do brilliantly against early goals, I don't think. I mean, bits of it reminded me of Southampton last season, where we conceded to that fluky Ings goal early on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. We could talk about those incidents. And in a way, Liverpool prepare not to concede early on from a set piece. And if we don't get protection for the keeper, I think we're entitled to feel aggrieved by it. But you do have to work on what happens when things go badly for you. And maybe that showed that we hadn't enough.
For me, I want to come back round to the set pieces in a second. For me, it's the goal that makes it 2-1 that I think, and the fact that it's followed up very, very quickly with another soft set-piece goal. But it's the goal that makes it 2-1 that is just the hammer blow. And the lack of cynicism in it is staggering from a Liverpool point of view. He's running with the ball for absolutely ages. Antonio is being a pain. He's almost like a loose horse at the Grand National at that point, and that's what he's doing all the way through, and it works for them, and Funales runs through, and it's a good passage of play, don't get me wrong. How on earth Jared Bowen carries the ball for that long, where not one of those Liverpool players, of whom none were on a yellow card, goes and just takes a yellow card, is beyond me.
Yeah, it's almost criminal, isn't it, that they haven't taken him down?
Because, and Fabinho's lost the ball in the past. Yeah. That's the time you do it. You exactly, take the hit.
Exactly.
It was your fault. Your recompense is you hit the lad, you take the yellow.
Exactly. It's been made huge, you know, what you know Man City sometimes do. But, you know, Fernandinho is hacking him down like there's no tomorrow, and he's taking that yellow card all day long. And that's what should be happening in that situation. Yes, we can also talk about the goalkeeper and everything, but he shouldn't. You can't allow at that level. And you know, West Ham have scored loads of goals like that. Yep. They do break. I remember last season there were so many goals. I think Leicester, they tear them apart in the same sort of way.
A lot of Lingard making that sort of
exactly, run. Exactly. And it just simply shouldn't be allowed to happen, because there are points of the game where, you know, we haven't seen this Liverpool side really ever take tactical fouls as much as other sides have. And it's something that everyone's kind of been calling for a little bit, and you know, we kind of wonder why we don't do it more. One like yesterday, there's no excuse not to do it, because the situation is clearly really dangerous. And also, it's just a bit weird if you're Fabinho. Like, I imagine myself playing football. If I make a mistake like that, my first instinct just, shit, I'm going to take him out. And he doesn't have that instinct, which is just a little bit strange to me.
Can I just defend them here for a sec? Because broadly, I'm on that, you know, on that side of, yeah, I'd like us to see us be more cynical. But I do wonder if they've had a chat about this. VAR, you know, it's increasing influence over the last 24 months. I wonder what a factor that plays, because, yes, it's dangerous at that point. But if you commit a foul, yes, in the hurly-burly of it, refs are used to giving yellows there. But when something can be re-looked at, the chances of getting a red are more heightened in the current climate. Just because if it's that cynical, they can find a way.
Like the Atletico one.
Yeah, they can find a way to give you a red. And then you go, was it really worth a fucking red when he was 20 yards, 15 yards inside your own half? That seems mad. That's just a counterpoint that occurred to me.
I think it is a fair counterpoint, but you've got to play the game in the situation, I think, Rob. And I think there's a way also, the Atletico one, the lad's got absolutely no chance of getting the ball and volleys him. If you pull him back, there was a pullback earlier on that was given on Arnold's where he got a yellow card for it. If you pull him back, it's not violent play or dangerous play, you can do a shirt pull. Or, you know, for me, there's an honest attempt to win the ball that Fabinho can go for, where he's probably not going to win the ball, but it's an honest attempt to win the ball and he clears everything out. Mm. And I understand completely this idea of you don't want the VAR thing coming in. You don't want the big eye of God going, well, actually, I think you'll see it's this and this. Mm. But there's a middle ground. Let me rephrase this. What does James Milner do?
Mm. Yeah. James Milner.
James Milner takes him out. He doesn't get sent off.
He's old school. He doesn't even believe VAR exists. He's not having it.
James Milner takes him out and he doesn't get sent off.
Yeah, true.
And he doesn't get sent off.
He's a master of the art, by the way.
He is, but he takes him out and he doesn't get sent off. Yeah. And then that's the, when you're watching it. I want to sort of, there's been a lot of talk, not least because for a couple of games, Henderson was toiling a little bit in the position at six when we were out of possession. Not when we're in possession, played really, really well. Similarly with Fabinho, I would argue, Adam. But in the same way, I think Fabinho found it really hard against West Ham. I was intrigued by the fact that he was subbed. The midfield structure, what he's asking of them, I think, in the middle of the park, and with all this stuff that's going on with right back, he's not half asking them to be perfect. He's asking them to be so good all the time. And that goal stems just from Fabinho giving a bit of a soft one away, but there is no safety net. They play with no safety net.
Mm. Yeah, I think I think the midfield thing is really is really interesting, because the manager, he knew he was losing a player, and we can have conversations about, oh, Thiago was going to be Wijnaldum's replacement, blah, blah, blah. But he knew he was losing the player, and he knew he was losing the player that he could depend on to be available all the time, basically. And we didn't replace that. And you've had conversations on other shows about, you know, you can't have nine midfielders, et cetera, et cetera. But when he asks the midfield to do the amount of work that he asks it to do, you know you're going to get through players. You're going to get through them like nobody's business, because you're asking so much of them. And I have no idea what the midfield plan is at the moment. And I think we saw that in Trent. Like, Trent was basically playing as a midfielder, not a right back. So what was the thought process behind that? What's going on with
was meant to get outside him, I think, but got dragged in.
Yeah, but kept getting dragged in. Well, you know, you can say he was meant to, but he didn't.
Yeah,
so, no, you know, the plan wasn't working. But we did it in I think he was doing it in the Atletico match as well, so it's not a new thing. It wasn't just for West Ham. So, but I don't.
I thought it was more pronounced.
Yeah, it was definitely
with Arnold's positioning, and I think you see Jordan try to get out over and over. But then you've got a massive question here, which is, who the fuck's playing right back?
Yeah,
you know, in practical filling the spaces ways, who's playing right back here, lads? Yeah. When those spaces need to be filled, because someone's got to.
Yeah.
And it can't be Mo.
Exactly. If you look at the goals, if you look at the goals against Atletico, there's the vindication of how the system should work. You've got Mo and Henderson overloading, dragging everyone out in the middle. Trent suddenly finds himself in Akers twice in an infield De Bruyne midfield position, perfectly positioned to whip one in where there's three forwards running in against two centre-backs. Goal. That didn't happen against West Ham. And why is the interesting question?
But why? So, Mike, I'll come to you on the interesting question then. The interesting question, because for me, what you describe against Atletico, that was interchanging positions. Mm. What I saw Liverpool do against West Ham was unbelievably static. Correct. But I refuse to believe that the manager's not got input into this. Liverpool, they weren't interchanging. In fact, I'll come back to you, Adam. They weren't interchanging, I didn't think.
No.
They were just adopting these positions and staying there.
Yeah. I kind of can't get my head around is, for the last few seasons, we've all been saying Trent is basically De Bruyne at right back. There hasn't been any big thing where we've gone, oh, teams have figured Trent out. So why are we trying to reinvent Trent's position? I don't get it. I don't understand what the thinking is behind it, especially when the midfield was confused and a little bit lost before this season. From the start of this season, the midfielders looked a little bit lost and confused. So, but now it's lost and confused with a right back thrown into the middle of it, and Henderson's maybe supposed to be covering him at right back, but he can't because he's getting dragged into fights. And it all just seems a little bit like, why? What's the point? Why have you done it?
I think with the Trent thing, I think we've seen it before, haven't we? Just it's probably slightly more subtly in terms of his positioning, and the interchanging is a big thing as well. I think it came down yesterday as simple as the fact that we just lost the ball so much, and we lost the ball in areas and in ways that you can't really do if you're playing like that. You can kind of cope with having Van Dijk as your safety net, if you like, or Matip and Van Dijk as your safety net. But you can't lose the ball in the areas Liverpool lost the ball to. And you had the likes of Bowen and Fornals coming in narrow when they needed to, and really flooding that midfield, and Rice and Suchek are a handful themselves. And I just think you can't play that type of football, and you can't have that kind of shape if you don't move it quick enough.
The other thing I think for Wad is you end up in a situation where the six is Fabinho or the six is Henderson, where whoever it is playing six is responsible for an enormous amount of the pitch. That's what I think is difficult. I think whoever plays six at the minute, I think Fabinho yesterday is possibly Liverpool's poorest performer, but I think he has the hardest job on the pitch.
Yeah.
In the same way that I think when Henderson plays there, Henderson has the hardest job on the pitch. And you've got to mitigate for that when talking about how the players then therefore play. But he does give it away, and he gives it away cheaply a few times. And then the risk of all of this is so great. And I think Adam's point, which, you know, the manager will have an answer to, of course he will, he's not a stupid man. But the question is, if the risk is so great, then what precisely is the reward?
Yeah.
And this is where it gets a little tricky at times, especially in phases of the game. Can we not just be tight for 15, 20 minutes here at 1-1 or not at Upton Park, at the London Stadium, and see where we are on 80, 82 and go from there? But Liverpool don't do that. They keep playing the high-risk, high-reward football, but the reward's got to be greater.
No, exactly. And I think Trent's a great example of it in the first half. The amount of times he gave the ball away, and I know playing those balls,
it's job really hard. Yeah, yeah.
And when it does come off, it comes off, you know, to great, great reward. And it's all about precision. But he gave the ball away in a way, you know, if you give the ball away, you want it to go out for a goal kick, or you want it to go out for a throw in down by the corner.
Get flag. Your shape back.
Exactly. You play that ball to Salah and you can get your shape back. But these were balls that are being intercepted in the midfield. And within one ball, you're kind of straight across the transition. And, you know, if you play on the transition against this Liverpool shape, especially with Fabinho Henderson looking as almost leggy from the beginning as they did, you're going to be in for trouble.
For me, Rob, we're doing something that's similar. I watched City United, or I watched the first half of City United, which were really all the bits of City United you needed to watch. And City do a lot of what we're describing as Liverpool trying to do here. But the difference for me is that City's blanket doesn't include a front three. So City have got players filling in these gaps, taking up unorthodox positions. Cancelo is a great example of an absolutely berserk fullback who's doing all sorts of crazy stuff, making it happen, coming really inverted, really narrow, playing like a playmaker. But the point is that City haven't also got three lads who are trying to score. Everyone's a centre mid. If you sort
of, they're playing three false nines.
Yeah, Bernardo Silva plays left back sometimes.
Yeah, they're, and Guardiola said afterwards, Oh, no, sorry, it was Foden's interview I watched after the game. Foden said me and Gabby, referring to Jesus, were told to pin down the fullbacks. So they were asked to be effectively defensive wide midfielders against attacking fullbacks, which is brilliant and nuts, I have to say, on Pep's part. But what that does is demand that then two at least, but maybe three centre mids have got to become effectively false nines to flood the box. That's what was going on there. But United, I thought Liverpool's game plan was to play. There was a period in the first half, even though we were behind and West Ham were confident and had something to defend, I thought you could see our game plan, and I quite liked it. We were playing a lot of vertical passes. So the idea was they played Declan Rice and what's his
Suchek.
And Suchek as like another pair of centre-backs in front of their centre-backs. So our idea was to vertically pass very quickly into our forwards' feet just to isolate their actual centre-backs. And what happened then, I thought, was Salah and Mane in particular were very, very narrow. And I think this is what ended up with us having to abandon the flanks, because we got caught between two strategies. I think what also plays into it, which you've all touched upon, is Liverpool aren't getting great results on average, I think, after big European midweek matches. And I think the legs on Henderson and Fabinho weren't there. It felt like we were watching Liverpool through sort of a smoky lens, like we did against City. I know it's a better opponent. It wasn't quite there. This is another week with a batch of games where we make virtually no changes. The only change was a fullback. I do wonder if you can talk about injuries. I do wonder if Jurgen's got to start looking at using the squad more in these three batches.
One of the other player who was not there, I think, Adam, and I do think it's one of the best absentee advertisements I've seen in a while, is having gone through all of this, my God, we didn't half miss Firmino.
Yeah. Mm.
In terms of where he's able to add, become the extra man. Again, this idea to play in more than one position at once, because he is the one who can come back and play as an extra midfielder. He can come and do all these little bits. He will do that additional sort of work and simultaneously show the quality. And in hindsight, watching that game, I don't think Jota's anywhere near as involved as Firmino would have been, or as we would like. I think the loss of Firmino there is really, really interesting. That if you are trying to do all of this and you're doing this high wire act, if you do need to be almost perfect against an opponent as good as West Ham, who are the fourth or fifth best team in the country on their grounds on a Sunday, crowd up. If you're going to do all of that, you've got to be that perfect. It may well be that if you haven't got Roberto Firmino at the minute, it just might not be working. And it might be that you've got to maybe think a little differently. In hindsight, because it's easy for us to say this as gobshites on a Monday morning when the manager has to test his theories on a Sunday at 4:30.
Yeah, I think the thing I've found strange is how the manager has almost used Jota and Firmino interchangeably, like as if they're the two where he's going, well, if I don't play Firmino, I'll play Jota, as if they're like for like swaps when they're 100% not. Like Jota's obviously made a brilliant impact since he signed. He's doing loads of good stuff. He's scoring goals. He scored more headers with us than I think he has in his career before he arrived. There's lots to like about Jota, but he is not Roberto Firmino. Now, there aren't many players that are, but I would almost rather he said, okay, I'm going to ask Minamino to do the Firmino role, because he's got that, I can buzz around, I can he can press, he can play that kind of, the bit between midfield and attack almost. He can do that. Jota can't. It's not in Jota's game, and that's fine. It's not a criticism of Jota. But when you play in a way where, as you say, you're missing Firmino, don't ask somebody else to do a Firmino but be crap at it. Like, it doesn't, do you know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make, I don't know, it's weird that he seems to have decided it's either Firmino or Jota in that role when another player could do that role better, I think.
I 100% agree with that. I wondered whether Minamino's time might have come, and whether he might have sprung a surprise there. I was actually calling for Minamino to be the sub for Chamberlain actually at that point, because I thought Chamberlain, without wanting to criticise him, was a sort of between stools player for us, really. Neither a true attacking threat nor able to give us.
I thought he was all right.
And in what he had to do, what he was charged with doing, he was all right. I just wondered if he wasn't quite the right fit in that circumstance. But we were restricted by options again. It's easy with hindsight. Sorry, Adam.
No, it's okay. Because I've seen quite a few people say I thought Chamberlain was all right, and I guess in whatever way he was. I saw something from Graham Kelly on Twitter. Now, Andrew Beasley might listen to the show and say, Adam, you're chatting absolute nonsense, but Graham Kelly said that by half time, Oxlade-Chamberlain had zero successful dribbles and gave the ball away 9 times. So when Fjord was talking before about giving the ball away, Chamberlain does that, and he does it in a really dangerous position every time. And 9 times in 45 minutes is a lot. Now, as I say, that might prove to be nonsensical stats, but that's what I've read on when I was looking through my Twitter timeline last night. That's not good. Like in the way that we're playing and the job that he's being asked to do, especially because with Oxlade-Chamberlain, the last few matches, when he's given the ball away, he's given it away in such an easy way, and he's not being like pressed or anything. He's just passed it to them.
But I thought that he was the one who was charged with trying to spur us on. Not dissimilar to how Thiago comes on and literally gives it away 4 times for his first 5 touches, which was, I mean, remarkable in lots of senses. It was like he
wanted to come off and start again, didn't he?
Yeah, like for a man who's such a sumptuous football, that it was literally like he'd not seen a footy before. What's this thing? It bounces. This is strange. Yeah. You know, I wonder if that's because we're trying to, and this is back to though, all within this conversation, I feel like everything becomes a bit of a clash. And that's why I think this is a difficult game to talk about and why it was so annoying. Like, I'm absolutely fine to come up against that West Ham team with the way it's set up and say, you know what we're going to do is we're going to continually force the issue. But the flip side of that is, if you're going to continually force the issue, then you've got to accept you're then going to give it away. Mm-hmm. If you then accept that you're going to give it away, you've then got to make sure you're not really, really soft in transitions. And I don't know, maybe tactically foul if it feels like they're going to get in. You know, all of these things end up being at each other's throat, if you sort of see what I mean. And that's where that's why I do think it is a difficult game. And the big thing for me is you're not obliged to do almost anything Liverpool do during the match. So much of what we're talking about are Liverpool's choices. And this is why I am a bit frustrated, not frustrated because I don't care really, but around West Ham praise, in that I think West Ham do pose you a set of questions, but how you go about answering them is down to you. And we chose this way. And that, for me, was just, in hindsight, and again, it's easy to do all this in hindsight, but in hindsight, it felt like, well, we didn't have to choose that way, you know, and it might be the best way, but maybe today we don't do the best way. Maybe we just match them up and go 4-2-3-1, or we do this or that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, look, I think that that's maybe something that we've seen a little bit from Klopp is a slight fault, is that maybe he's not great at saying, let's not do the perfect performance, let's do the performance that's going to win. Like, he doesn't necessarily do that all the time, and sometimes you kind of think, why are you doing that? And there were quite a few decisions I think yesterday where you look at going, there's too many things, we're carrying too many situations here. And I think one, like the perfect one for me, perfect example for me is Andrew Robertson. We know he loves him, but he's not playing well. He has not been playing well for quite a while, and it looks like fatigue, and it's not the sort of fatigue where it's okay, I gave him the midweek off and he's going to feel better about it. He needs like a couple of weeks rest. And the other lad has done really well in left back, so play him for a while, but he doesn't seem to want to because he's like, the perfect team has Robertson at left back.
I felt sorry for Andy Robert first half, to be honest. I'm not going to take total issue with you there, but I Watford the other week, when everyone was getting praised, rightly so, we had a great performance, most scores, a worldie again. I thought Andy Robbo was sensational that day, one of a high watermark performance. Okay, it's against Watford, but he wasn't on Danny Rose's side, so, you know. but notwithstanding that, Andy Robbo was pushing on, finding space, getting into positions. The crosses weren't quite there. There were a lot of blind pullbacks, but I do feel he was on his own. There was very, again, then the narrowness thing. Okay, Trent was totally tucked in on his side, but Robbo had almost nobody going with him. That's the number of times I thought, there's no triangles for him to play with here. He's got to bomb on and get that crossing because there's literally no option for him there. But I felt sorry for him. That's first half in particular.
But I thought that was West Ham saying, he's not playing well, just keep giving it to Robbo. It felt like they were sort of deliberately saying, give him loads of space because he's not playing well. And he's taking two or three touches where previously he'd take one. Because he's not in good form.
He was getting
in
behind them, though.
I think he was getting in behind them, but then he was crap once he got in behind them. I think he played one good ball in the whole 90 minutes. So that's because I think West Ham are going, he's not playing well, don't worry about it. Like, if we've got to give Liverpool some space somewhere, give it to Robertson.
I thought it was a Firmino-shaped hole.
I was about to say, I think he was passing to Firmino.
Yeah.
But that's brainless, isn't it? Because he's, believe it or not, he went on the fucking pitch.
He's got Mane, but I think this is the learned behaviours of, he was playing the ball to where Firmino arrives onto it. Jota doesn't do that. Jota wants to make a dart to either post and see what he can win in the air.
Correct.
Go up against the centre-halves. Mo's corner coming from the back post and see what he can sort out there. And Mane's going to go near post. And basically, I was thinking he's putting that into an area there. So therefore, it either becomes, so it's Chamberlain to go and get onto the end of that, or it's, you know, someone's got to behave a little bit differently. And that's, go on.
I just think on that whole thing with Robertson, you know, a lot of it depends on how quickly the ball gets moved to that side. And that's what creates the space at the end of the day. Yes, he can make the runs and everything. But when Liverpool do play well for that little period in the first half, the ball is coming down that side very quickly. And yes, his final delivery isn't great, but you need to create that over and over again. Liverpool had to be quicker within the midfield and switching from left to right or right to left. And I know there's not that much space, but you know, we've seen Liverpool do that before. We've seen Liverpool do that well when they're at their best.
But isn't that ball a ball that's often played from the right when he's on the right by Arnold, yeah, to Robertson? And then if you have Arnold in the middle of the pitch, then he's going to take, mm-hmm, the ball on the journey on the way through. And then he's going to go, well, you've literally added an extra pass to this journey.
Definitely, exactly. And that's why when they are playing through the middle, that's when, and trying to penetrate the lines, passing through the lines, that is when you miss Firmino, don't you? Because he is the one that naturally can move into those positions much more so than Jota, and picking up the ball and then moving it out wide. And I just thought if that was the way to go, then maybe we should have seen a slight different thing in the shape, with Jota maybe being out wide, maybe Salah down the middle, or something a little bit different, just to ask those centre backs more questions. Because I was convinced we were going to get a penalty at some point, just because of how quick the couple of times Salah got the ball in their box or in and around their box, and he moved it really quickly, a few little touches. You think if you do that enough, you know, these will give away something, because he's just too quick in those situations.
That frustrated the hell out of me, though, when Salah got in those positions, because Smoke, you go, he's literally got four players about him. He was being Maradona. He'd get past three, but the fourth. But there was nothing just to his left, or most importantly, just to his right. There was no little tuck he could have done. It was as though the rest of us were just backing on, going, whoa, this is the Mo Show. Stand around like someone doing a fucking spinning on their head, doing a break dancing while everyone's around clapping. I thought, come on, Mo is good, but Jesus Christ, it seemed crazy.
But also, make a dummy run, because it'll distract them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One in the second half where the fullback is so scared, he's turned round, he's running away, and I think Salah's just dribbling, but the ball goes through his legs like two or three times, and there's no movement to create that bit of space for him, so we can get the shot away.
I want to talk about Divock in the context of that, but I want to go to the set pieces first and foremost. Adam, it feels like it's maybe happening too often now, with very specific plans that are coming up against us, with an awareness that we're maybe a bit soft here or a bit soft there. We can be got at in this way or got at in that way. And there's a flip side to this, which is they get away with the first one and it creates the goal, and that puts doubt everywhere, but it puts certainty in them. But over the course of the match, in the end, from the set pieces, I did not feel like we were being set up like a fast bowler across and over, where he's going at the stumps this time, and just outside the stumps. You know, where the Zuma one actually comes from for me is Liverpool being so obsessed with what's going to happen at the near post, everybody completely forgets what's happening at the back post.
Yeah, and I think actually, very briefly going back to the conversation before about the why didn't they just take Jarrod Bowen down, it felt a little bit like they'd had a conversation before the match saying these are really good at set pieces, don't give any daft set pieces away. And so there was a refusal to tackle him because they were thinking, we don't want to give away a daft set piece. But then they continually gave away stupid corners and things like daft set pieces that didn't lead to goals but were daft set pieces. And I was really, if I had any hair left, I'd have been tearing it out at the fact that they just don't, they just time and again, Liverpool were making stupid decisions against a team that desperately want to do set pieces, for precisely the reason you're saying, is because they're going, look, if we get eight set pieces, we can do six of them like this, and the seventh one, we get the goal.
It was softening us up, I think.
And the formula was really crude, but effective. Mm. The formula was pin down the goalkeeper, because the centre-halves will defend just beyond the six-yard box, pin down the goalkeeper, and literally float it in. I mean, if they don't pin down the goalkeeper, he catches it every time. But they do pin him down, and Klopp's right, the first goal shouldn't count. Every kind of slow motion, it doesn't look like a great offence, and he's jumping blind. But he knows what he's doing. He's jumping backwards. Two of them go for him.
The goalkeeper's arm literally moves because of what they're doing. Now, if that was a forward running, and it was the foot that moved and he tripped, people would say it's a penalty because he's clipped his foot. You can see in the slow motion that the goalkeeper's arm literally moves. The one that he will be punching the ball away with literally moves. It shouldn't count, but it does count. The referee lets him get away with it, so they go, we'll just keep getting away with this. We'll just do it time and time again. And what I'll be honest, by the end of everything, I was so angry with fucking everyone in that team. Why hasn't one person, Virgil van Dijk should have gone, I'm going to go and deal with Antonio.
Yes.
The goalkeeper should have said, can somebody come and deal with Antonio?
Yes.
The captain should have said, I'm going to go over and deal with Antonio. But instead, you've got the goalkeeper obsessed with Antonio and nobody helping him in any way whatsoever. And then, oh, there they are, the fellas at the back post, because that's what they've been planning for ages. Yeah, it's just, it was so... it was so frustrating because it was clear. That's where I was. That's what I was frustrated with. It felt like it was really clear that that's what you need to do. Get somebody in there, anyone. And I hate the goalkeeper didn't ask for it. I hate the captain didn't do something about it. I hate their defensive leader didn't do anything. They all pissed me off.
I know we've got these 6'4", 6'5" guys, right? We've been saying for years, Liverpool aren't soft at set pieces because we have those fellas. You've got to do a touch more homework. Now, I agree with you. It felt like the homework is don't give away the set pieces. But on the set pieces, have we really watched what they were doing? Because I tell you what, if I'd known beforehand how West Ham do their set pieces, I hadn't watched them close enough. We've got Virgil van Dijk and Joel Matip.
I think that's they've set that up specifically for us. Andy's just held a piece of paper up saying Burnley do it for years. That's the way Burnley try to get stuff out of us when they play against us. And it doesn't matter who the goalkeeper is. I think what Liverpool think is, rightly or wrongly, you don't want to get sucked back there because then they'll move it into the other place and the lads got further to go and attack it. We don't want to interrupt the thing. The goalkeeper will be strong enough. And that's why the manager is particularly annoyed, because I think in his mind, the six-yard box is the goalkeeper's, and if you interfere with him in any way, shape or form, it should be given. But I think that's almost a building block around which how we defend the set pieces.
Yes.
The point is that if that building block is kicked away, then maybe something's got to be a little bit different.
But that's what Liverpool have done so many times before. Adam mentioned before about, you know, Klopp not being good at, in terms of telling them not to worry too much about performance, just grinding out the result. And I think a lot of that has come from in the past, the players on the pitch, rather than the manager. The players have figured things out, and the players have decided, it helps obviously when you go 1-0 up or you go 2-0 up. They have decided at that point, okay, we are going to play like this and we are going to do these things. And it's the same thing yesterday, whether you do your homework or not about what West Ham do for set pieces, and I'm sure they do it extensively, that should have been figured out straight after the first time it happened. Yeah. And the fact that it happened and it resulted in a goal is even more baffling, because they clearly saw the consequence of it.
The flip side of that is that it might be that the players had begun to figure out, do it a little bit differently, all went to the front post and they just went to the back post.
Yeah, they do that.
Trent was on his own.
No, they do that.
They hit the bar, don't they?
They hit the bar, yeah.
They hit the bar. They try the same goal again.
This is what I mean by the cricket metaphor. They set you up. You think this is what's going to happen, and then they do, not quite the opposite, but they do the thing that this time you've gone a little bit differently.
But they don't even do that for the Zuma goal. There's still no one blocking Antonio or whoever it is standing in front of the keeper. So it's not even like they've lost got onto that. That Zuma goal is annoying as well, because you just see Trent and Mane, who probably aren't the best two to have in the back post, and you know you only have a certain amount of 6'3" players, so someone's got to stand somewhere. They just don't even see him make that run. They Trent has no idea where he is, and he just sort of floats in there from the middle of the goal, and it's just a really poor one to concede.
I you know, my biggest takeaway whenever I see Liverpool conceding goals like that from set pieces, apart from the annoyance that it's happened, I think, why can't we just do that? Yeah. You know, can we not put our two big grocks on their keeper and just, because we've got players who can float one in.
We do that against some, so when we play Leeds, we do that against their scruff of a goalkeeper, so we are prepared to do it.
Okay. I think Firmino's important in that as well, because he is a little bit bigger as well, and he does offer that. So I feel like I've seen him block off keepers before, just stand in the way a little bit.
Yeah. Last little thing before we sum up.
Go in and cry.
Divock's cameo. It's an excellent goal. For me, he's very involved and causes problems. Again, you've got to not... We need to remember throughout all of this, we get to talk with hindsight and a manager doesn't, but you sort of forget how imposing he can be, not least because he himself, Rob, at times doesn't impose enough. Mm. But I thought he came on and Dawson did not want to have any part of this all the way through. And I thought that was because... I think the injury in the end helps them, because Ogbonna goes off, Zuma, who I think is an excellent and much underrated player, goes to Salah's side, so he's closer to Salah. I think Ogbonna's nowhere near in Zuma's class. Dawson then comes on. Dawson, I don't think, is in Zuma's class either. But when we begin to get at Dawson, which is what Divock does, they suddenly look really, really ropey, I thought. But this is not an argument to say, and therefore Divock should have started. Because I understand if he'd have picked Divock and then we'd have got beat, everybody would be livid. So you've got to bear that in mind. But what I mean is more, you forget what Origi can do to opposing defenders at times, and he does it in his little cameo.
Well, he's unlike our front three stroke four, isn't he? Because none of them are strikers by trade. And he's a striker, and he's a poacher. And he goes, you know, he will get a shot away that little bit earlier than them. He's got those kind of instincts. And when it is so tight and compressed, it's quite handy to have one of them. You know, City benefited from having Aguero. For all his qualities, he was also an expert poacher. So Jesus, you know, they do. We people talk about City not having a striker. Yes, they fucking will do, even if they pin him on a left back. But a lot of the time, he's in front of the post. We a lot of the time don't have an actual striker. Salah is not a striker. Mane is not a striker. They have those. They have those attributes and qualities. They can do things that conventional centre forwards can't do. Divock has a unique set of skills. I feel like it's something I'm gonna. What film am I quoting? The Liam Neeson one or whatever it is.
Yep.
But he does. Take and him. You do occasionally see it cameoed, and he's a useful lad to have around the scene.
I
deep sigh, Adam.
Well, it's because I feel like I don't know. I feel like a terrible person when it comes to Divock Origi because I'd have sold him about three seasons ago. I and this is a wild sweeping statement that I'm happy for people to tell me. I'm chatting absolute biscuits, broken biscuits about. But it felt like we haven't seen the Divock Origi that we saw last night basically since 15-16. He just hasn't done it. So it's no wonder that the manager hasn't had any faith in him to do it and certainly wouldn't have thought, I'll start him because that's the sort of performance we're going to get from him.
Couldn't get
hasn't done it. Yeah, okay. I mean, not amazing, though. I think he's just... There's been so many times from Origi where he's got away with it because he scored a goal that has basically been... iconic, like
and Jota and, the Slotter gets away with it as well.
Well, yeah, I think that's fair actually, but actually,
he slots much more regularly.
Yeah, he slots more regularly.
A lot of slotting.
The thing with it, I mean, Origi, the big thing, the quintessential Origi for me is the Champions League final where he is rubbish. Like he is abysmal in that final. He doesn't make a single pass when he comes on. He is one of the worst individual performances I've ever seen from a player when he comes on.
How long is he on the pitch for that?
And I don't know. I 25 minutes.
Yeah,
never watched it back. Just for me, injured.
Abysmal. And yet, scores the goal which we'd all build a statue for him for, right?
Yeah.
So I can understand why, from the manager's point of view, he's like, sometimes he scores those goals, but the rest of the time, he's really not very good, you know? But I completely agree with you. He was brilliant when he came on. He really was. He did exactly what you want a player like him to do. But I 100% understand why the manager doesn't turn around to him very often, because he doesn't do it enough.
I'm not with that 100%. I just think it's this, maybe, just maybe, he could have been of use a little earlier with the way in which the match was going. Not just in the ad, you know, when he does Chamberlain for Thiago, is there an argument to then be thinking about that? And again, all of us would have gone in a Thiago-ish direction, but maybe, just maybe, the idea of Divock being introduced around that stage, whether for Jota or not,
I agree completely, but I suppose my point is that the manager's probably doesn't know that he's going to get that performance.
Oh, no, of course he doesn't.
The manager's probably sitting there thinking, we're giving the ball away loads anyway, I don't want to give away more.
But you don't know that. The one thing I would say is that I think that's true of all subs. If you sort of, like, all subs have that element of, you, no matter how, you know, you could bring Messi on, and Messi could stink the gaff out when he comes on as a sub, because it takes everyone a bit of time to get to the pace, like Thiago, and all, as happens with Thiago. I'm just, I'm intrigued by it. Okay. We could have nicked a draw if we had it, a miss by his standards there, Mane, at the end. He can also go at it with his feet. As I said before, I think that they play. I think that the draw would have been the correct result for them. It might not have been for us, certainly, if you're going to keep conceding three goals. So I struggle to give them a ton of credit, but that might be being Liverpool obsessed. Where it leaves the season, and this is the other strange thing about the game, is that on 55, and I'm, you know, to be really honest, I took a point. Yeah. And the reason why I took a point was because at the start of the weekend, I thought Chelsea will win, we'll need to win against West Ham. As it was, Chelsea didn't win, they drew. And on 55, when it was all a bit sticky, it was all a bit horrible, I was thinking, lads, just get out of here with the points. And then whereas we were against Chelsea, it's going to feel like three dropped because of the nature of the Chelsea result against Burnley. In a strange way, that would be worse if Chelsea had won against Burnley and then we'd lost, because the gap would have grown, if you sort of know what I mean. But the irony is that you feel as though there was an opportunity for Liverpool to have put some real scoreboard pressure on Chelsea. They've not done it, and now it feels like Liverpool are going to be the team with scoreboard pressure on them.
Exactly, and it all adds to, you know, we've all talked about loads about, you know, Liverpool will have to go on a run at some point, and whoever goes on the best run wins the league, essentially, the way it's looking. But these little results just make that run even more important, in terms of more games have to go in that run, more wins have to come in that run.
If you concede eight to Brentford, West Ham and Brighton, you're asking a lot of your own run.
Exactly. You're asking too much, probably, in a lot of senses, because, you know, at the end of the day, Liverpool are going to face more challenges like this. There are a lot of good teams in this league, and there are a lot of teams that are going to see what Liverpool have struggled with this season and are going to follow suit in similar ways. The early goals are a thing that you probably might see a lot of teams kind of pick on now, I think.
Commit early to
see if they get exactly. Something. And if they can get Liverpool a little bit shaky and a little bit rattled, then there's going to be a problem. I just hope this international break comes in a way where, you know, obviously we're all going to be distracted by it because it's the 2 weeks and it's the last result we have and the media and everyone has to talk about. But I just hope there can be a little bit of a, I know it's always been said, like a little bit of a reset, just so that they can go away, they can come back and almost forget this last week in a lot of ways.
I think it's time for cool heads, he said, having been, you know, suicidal and 90 yesterday, 94 yesterday. But it is time for cool heads, and I know that's always true. I don't think we're going to, I know when we reconvene prior to Arsenal in a fortnight, we're all going to go, this is fucking must win. We're all going to go, it's fucking must win. And the week after, whoever we play in, neither.
Southampton.
Okay. It's going to be must win for the next 2 or 3 weeks because of this.
And for home games.
And there is that scoreboard pressure. But nobody's running at a great points getting rate. And nobody looks like they're about to click into a 15-match winning run. So I think if you can be cool and find your space to start that run, you may find it. City did it really well last year, didn't they? They're nowhere, but everyone's dropping. Liverpool have edged to the top, but without being entirely convincing by Christmas last year. But look like...
Drew 4 out of 7.
Yeah, but have a nice big win. Got 2 or 3 points clear at Christmas. Yeah, it's Liverpool. City aren't doing it. But it just took the likes of Liverpool to drop off a touch, for City just to hit their stride, and there you go. So even Arsenal, I can see a disappointing home draw or whatever against a resurgent Arsenal. I even think then we don't need to lose our shit. Then we need to remember, this is a really good Liverpool team. Me and you were talking prior to kickoff, because Moyes had said, throwing some sugar at us, this is the form team in Europe, he'd said. Now we're shit and off the pace in the league. Well, his justification for saying the form team in Europe is we'd won 4 out of 4 tough Champions League games and had only dropped points in, 3 league games prior to yesterday. And we're on the back of a good run at the end of last season. We're not... Okay, somebody might have edged ahead of us now as the form team in Europe, but we're not suddenly shit. We're still the team that won 5-0 at Old Trafford, 5-1 in Porto, 5-0 at Watford, beat Atletico Madrid, the champions of Spain, home and away. We are still very much that side. And it's not like we're flaky like we were last season, like losing 7-2 at Villa, losing a shitload of home games. This feels slightly different because a lot of these games where we've dropped points could have gone our way. And of the games we did get points, they were emphatic.
The games, that's to me both the concern, but it's also where the potential benefit is. They should beat Brighton. They should see it out against Brentford. Even against West Ham there at 1-1, they should come out second half and be better. For me, this is the... What's the metaphor I'm looking for, really? Because it's not tightrope. For once, normally it is. Sorry for being boring. This is the aspect of this which, if Liverpool fall one way or the other, Adam, I think it's what's going to define the season. They're either going to find ways to, in these games where they are put in positions or have opportunities, find ways to turn those into victories, or they're going to find that inconsistency is going to continue and maybe even worsen a little bit, and that's how the season's going to run. But for me, that's the position, and that's the challenge now for the manager, talking about the reset. He's the one who gets 2 weeks. He's the one who, with his analysts, they get to look at everything. They can watch every game back, and I'm sure they're watching stuff back today. They're the ones who get to have a big think about this and say, this is how we ensure Brentford, Brighton, West Ham doesn't happen again.
I think that is... I honestly don't think it's an exaggeration to say it's season defining what happens next, because I thought after Brentford it felt like the sort of thing where, okay, the manager will go away and figure this out, like he did in the, you know, I keep going back to that Tottenham game, you know, where we get battered by Tottenham and we all think, God, the defence is a nightmare, what's going to happen, but, and the manager goes away, figures it out, and we're brilliant in the run after that. I thought that had happened after Brentford and it didn't. I thought that had happened after Brighton and it hasn't. It needs to happen now, and he's got 2 weeks to kind of make that happen. And I actually think Moyes is still telling the truth when he said that we were the form team in Europe, because we are, but we're not the form team in the Premier League, because we keep dropping too many stupid points and we're dropping them from winning positions. That's where I'm most annoyed. We took the lead against Man City, drew. We took the lead against Brentford, drew. Took the lead against Brighton, drew. That is not a title winning team doing that sort of thing. And that's what the manager needs to figure out, how to get us back to being the team where if we go ahead, the team goes up, we've lost this then, because we're not getting back into this game.
I do think we're prone to think that what happens in October, November is a harbinger of exactly how you'll be performing in April, May, though.
And it wasn't in 18-19.
No, it can be if you go, well, look, we're still conceding goals. It doesn't have to be that. So you see many seasons where there's just a flaky month. And I'm not sure. whether it's working it out or whether it's just regaining concentration. I also think the way we concede the goals and the way the games go in those games you cited aren't necessarily the same thing. Brentford is a sort of a wild game, really. I'm not sure West Ham was. In some respects, it's a game of few chances. And, you know, their chances and their goals are... the ones we'd say they have something of an expected goals are three set pieces of which they score two. They score one on the counter and they think they get another one which snuffed out on the counter. But it doesn't feel quite as yo-yoing.
It's a very low XG game.
Yes, it doesn't feel quite as yo-yo-y.
The balls on the Anfield wrap. The shape, sorry.
But yeah, but it doesn't feel quite as yo-yo-y as Brentford to me. And Brentford's also one where I think we could have won 5-2. I don't think we're ever winning that because I think Salah scores at 4-2, we're then probably back in maybe 6-2. Something crazy then happens and we smash them. Was that yesterday could have been a 2-1 game. I think if Sadio bags just after half time, it's possibly a 2-1 game. We regain our composure.
For what's the finishes?
I think a big thing for him is the midfield. I think he's probably, a lot of his conversations are around that. Because we can talk about having midfielders available, but there has to be a very specific blend of midfielders available, and you need certain people to be able to play with other certain people. And we saw that, you know, Brighton epitomised that, really, that the mix was just wrong. Individually, all great players and all have a role to play in different games, but together it just didn't quite work. And I think that game might worry him more than what we saw yesterday, and just in the fact that the second half performance was so bad and it was so out of control almost. You can take losing games, you know, where the other team, or drawing games where the other team have two moments and they just take them. That happens in football. That's happened a lot to this Liverpool side. But the performance aspect of it has to be different. Things that are in Liverpool's control and the control of football matches. You know, I always think back to that 2-0 against Sheffield United when we win the league over Christmas, and the way Chris Wilder talked about Liverpool after that. You just couldn't, like, we weren't great, you know, that we weren't brilliant, but you just couldn't get near us. And we just had such a level of control about everything we did. And that came from everyone on the pitch. That didn't really come from the manager necessarily. That was the players on the pitch, the leaders on the pitch, making sure that kind of stayed. And I just feel like that sort of disappeared a little bit. And I'm not sure how that gets solved. I think that might be a bit more of a man management thing maybe, or it might just be the players themselves needing a bit of time away, playing with different players and then coming back to it.
Fuad Hassan there articulating that we're missing James Milner and Roberto Firmino. Thank you very much indeed to Fuad, to Rob, to Adam, Andy for producing. It's been your Anfield Wrap this week. You want more? TheAnfieldWrap.com/subscribe or download the app. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.